The show is live and local. It's your local performance connection. And on today's show, I'll be talking with Ian Hobson, who is music director of Sinfonia da Camera, the chamber orchestra based at the Kraner Center for the Performing Arts at the University of Illinois. And they're opening their 2011-2012 concert season on Saturday with a concert of music by Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms. And Ian also launches a 10-concert recital series of all of the solo piano works by Robert Schumann. That starts tonight at Smith Memorial Hall in the U of I campus. We'll be hearing lots of music featuring Ian Hobson or his orchestra on today's Live and Local. Stay with us. And so you got a healthy dose of the Academic Festival Overture of Johannes Brahms in a performance here by the Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Claudio Abbado. And you can hear that work played, of course, in its entirety on the opening concert for the new season of Sinfonia da Camera, the professional chamber orchestra in residence at the Kraner Center at the University of Illinois. And that is on Saturday night, a program they're calling B is for Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms. Those guys, often known as the three Bs. There are many more, of course, but those are three of the bigger ones. And we might sample some of those other pieces that are on that particular program. But on the show with me today for the hour is Ian Hobson, who is conductor and music director of Sinfonia da Camera. And he's going to be sort of previewing their concert season, but also previewing a series that he is launching tonight, which is a 10-concert recital series throughout this season of all of the solo piano music of Robert Schumann. As I say, that starts tonight with a performance at Smith Memorial Hall in the recital hall there, 7:30 of a variation-themed program. Ian Hobson joins us here on Live and Local. Thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here.
This is seems you did a Schumann cycle, or at least a good chunk of Schumann's music, several years ago, didn't you? In a rather short period of time.
I did a concert on the what would be the kind of salon style seating, and the hall was this in the Great Hall, Fellinger Great Hall, and the hall was available for 1 week, I mean for 5 days in a row consecutively. So I had a kind of take it or leave it attitude to you know whether I was going to do this or not, and I decided to do Schumann's well-known works. I mean, I didn't do the sonatas on that. I didn't do any of the strange pieces like the impromptus that I'm doing tonight. But I did his famous works. You know, his cycles, Kreisleriana, the fantasy. Carnival, etc. And that was very interesting for me, and it was nice to be able to do it in that intimate setting so I could talk to the audience too. This time the series is of all of the works, and it's in Smith Hall, which is a lovely old hall filled with wood, and it's a very inviting hall, I think, for this kind of music. And so I'm looking forward to that, too.
But people won't be sitting on the stage with you.
But they'll be sitting in a closer than they would be if they were in the Great Hall.
Will you have some things to say to the audience during these programs?
I think so, yes, because we don't have program notes, and it's such an amazing treasure of wonderful stories and connections for Schumann. Even the first piece that he wrote, or that he published, the Abegg Variations, Opus 1, is variations on the name Abegg. It's not anything more than just using those musical notes.
And who or what is Abe?
Well, that's the other thing. It's dedicated to the Countess Pauline von Abegg. But from most of the scholarship that's been done recently, either this person didn't exist, or did exist and was a girlfriend of Schumann's, but certainly no countess. So he writes this. This is the last piece that he wrote in the virtuoso style that Chopin would use for a lot longer, you know, using the whole range of the keyboard.
As opposed to what
he did afterwards, which was use the middle range of the keyboard, write very contrapuntal music, exciting certainly, but it's not in the mold of Chopin or Mendelssohn or Hummel or Moscheles, you know, the real virtuoso players of the time, because Schumann was interested in other things. Schumann was interested in inner voices and literary allusions and he had sort of in jokes. He would quote himself from one piece to another. You just never knew what was happening. And he employs a technique at the end of the piece where these five notes are played as a chord, but we hear them in the audience as the performer releases the notes one by one. So it's like a discovery of the motive rather than playing the motive.
The pitch is A, B, E, G, G. Yeah. Is the motive in that order?
Yes, A, B, E, G, G. Yes. And then he inverts it too. I mean, he plays around with it.
So if this is the last of the virtuoso pieces that he wrote?
Not virtuoso pieces, that's probably the wrong word. I would say the last time that he used the accepted virtuoso style, the elegant Chopin-esque kind of...
And flying all over the keyboard.
Yeah.
Sort of.
He did. He employed tons of virtuosity. I mean, he was influenced, as all of them were, heavily by Paganini. And he tried to create that on the piano. And I'm playing one of those... He wrote 12 caprices, transcriptions of 12 caprices, and I'm spreading them throughout the 10 programs.
This is the Abegg Variations is published as his Opus 1, so the first piece. Does that mean that this particular style of pieces were mostly not published, or the Opus 1 doesn't really indicate the order in which he wrote these things?
No, it was Opus 1 because he felt this was the first piece that he was really satisfied with. He started many things. He started piano concertos, symphonies, chamber works, you know, all sorts of things during his teens. And he was just barely 20 when he published this, I think. But he was a very estimable pianist. I mean, that's what he wanted to be. He wanted to tour. He wanted to study with Hummel. He wanted to be able to play the thing that he graduated with. He did the Alexander's March by Moscheles, which is extremely difficult, you know, tremendously virtuosic. And he wanted to play Hummel's fifth sonata, the F-sharp minor. Some stories say that he damaged his hand trying to strengthen his finger so he could play the last movement of that. But he could certainly play things, and he was listened to very often in those days. And then later he gave up the public business of performing on the piano.
And but of course his eventual wife, took up that mantle quite successfully. By the way, I'm told, maybe you knew this already, that this is the eve of her birthday.
So I was not aware of that.
I wasn't either, but Vic DiGeronimo was peeking ahead for his program tomorrow, and he said, well, why don't you mention that? So there you go, something to say tonight if you want.
Okay.
Happy birthday, Clara, tomorrow. Well, let's hear a little bit at the beginning of this first published work of his, The Variations on the Name Abegg, A-B-E-G-G. And this is actually from a performance of yours, of Ian Hobson's, from 1991. And I might have a follow-up question here in a minute. And Ian Hobson will be playing that piece along with quite a number of others tonight at 7:30. a free program at Smith Music Hall on the U of I campus. You're listening to Live and Local. Thank you. And that's as good a place as any to stop. It's a good chunk. I guess we heard the first four variations, the first three variations after the theme of the variations on the name Abegg by Robert Schumann. His Opus 1, his first published piece, and that is one of the pieces that you can hear tonight at 7:30 in a recital by Ian Hobson at on the University of Illinois campus in Smith Recital Hall. The first of his 10 concert series this season. Featuring all of the solo piano music of Robert Schumann, who is just a wonderful pianistic composer. And I was interested, since I played this performance of yours from 1991, to know, as you revisit this music, what, if anything, has changed for you, if you've even gone back to listen to this one in any...
No, I haven't gone back to listen to it.
To know the answer to that question.
One always hopes that, you know, that the next time you do something is going to be better than the time before, and so that's all one can hope for.
Whatever better may mean, but not you don't necessarily have any general way in which your vision of Schumann's music has changed.
Not necessarily, but maybe in a subtle way. I mean, the more you study this stuff and come back to it, and look at, that's why I like to look at all the pieces, because it puts a perspective on the great works that we know and love. And so I think things change, you know, perhaps a little, but inevitably.
This is the first of, you said the last of kind of, not the right word, but the virtuoso style, the characteristic virtuoso style that other composers like Chopin were using at that point. But this was also very typical of the sort of piece he wrote for a good while, which was of these little character pieces, where lots of small movements, even though these are variations.
Yes, it does have some of those characteristics. And of course, the next opus is Papillon, which is a collection of real miniatures. And as Carnival is an even bigger collection, and characters based on the Commedia dell'arte, you have Pierrot, Harlequin, and you have his own names for his personalities, his own split personality, Eusebius and Florestan, the introverted part of him, the impetuous part of him, Florestan. And then he has titles like Chiarina. Chiarina is his name for Clara.
Clara, who was not at that point his wife, but was to become his wife, I think, at the time that was written.
That's right. And then he has other women. Estrella is his name for Ernestine, who's another friend of his.
Von Fricken or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, that's right. And then Chopin is... characterized in Carnival. Paganini is characterized in Carnival.
So these character pieces are unlike the variations of this that we just heard now, which are, of course, variations on some theme already stated, are little pieces that you could just play by themselves and
well,
be done if
yes,
you wanted.
But Carnival, its subtitle is Delightful Scenes on Four Notes. And the four notes are the name, the musical letters of Schumann's own name. So you have S-H-S-C-H-A, and you have A-S-C-H. So A-S is A-flat, so it's only three-note motif. And C-H, C, and H is in German is B-natural. So you have A flat, C, B natural, and you also have the other. So Asch is a town where somebody came from. So it's A S C H. So he combines all these things, and S C H A is.
This is like a crossword puzzle,
yes,
or acrostics, or something like that.
He was doing
like
all
that.
The time like that. And I mean, there's a piece in there in which he just lays out these motives in whole notes, and it's called Sphinxes. And I will list this in the program, but the Sphinxes are not to be played.
Now, what sense does that make?
Well,
or is this just
it's for the performer?
Which is why it's not on this recording here. I was looking at things. Oh, I don't see anything about Sphinxes.
Yeah, it should be around, two thirds of the way through, and some people list it and some people don't. One famous recording is of Rachmaninoff playing Carnival, and he plays the Sphinxes. He plays it in the rumbling, you know, Great Bells of Moscow tradition.
Well, I guess if you're going to play it, in spite of the instruction, I guess you can do what you want with
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
You know. Well, you had suggested to me while we were listening to the Abegg variations that there's a piece in one of the recitals coming up that has that will lead us actually into a conversation about Saturday's concert with Sinfonia da Camera, which was a piece, I don't know this one at all, his Allegro Opus 8?
Allegro Opus 8, which is just the first movement of a sonata, essentially.
That he never finished.
He probably decided to do one movement. And its motive is a three-note motive at the beginning, which is very much like the Hummel F-sharp minor sonata that he wanted to play so badly. And that I knew. But when I studied the piece, I discovered other things that I didn't know. And in the coda, there is one very short chordal passage which is absolutely reminiscent of the unfinished symphony, second movement of Schubert,
yeah.
of Franz Schubert. And then, as you get to the very end of the work, there's a whole passage which is a harmonic scheme exactly like Brahms uses in his first symphony, slow movement.
And the catch and there is that
the catch there is that this
Schubert
piece was written
was
in
gone.
I mean, Schubert was worshipped by Schumann. He studied just about everything he could get his hands on, so that's no surprise. The real surprise is that Brahms wasn't born when this piece was written, and so Brahms obviously absorbed this music and internalized it and used it.
And Brahms was, of course, became a protege of Schumann's to an extent.
Yeah.
Even more a protege, really, of Clara's, I guess. Well, here's a list a little.
Let's listen to the end of it.
To the end of it.
You might hear these things.
See if people are, you know, who know the first symphony of Brahms really well might pick this, which means let's see if I can figure this out. Not very likely, but we'll try. Alethea de la Rocha is the pianist here. We'll hear the end of the Allegro Opus 8 of Robert Schumann on Live and Local. That's in advance of hearing Ian Hobson play a lot of Schumann tonight at 7:30 on the U of I campus.
Thank you.
That's just the tail end of the Allegro in B minor, Opus 8 of Robert Schumann, played here by Alethea de la Rocha on Live and Local on FM 90.9. We have support for our show today from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jams, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Ian Hobson is my guest on Live and Local today. He is a professor of piano at University of Illinois, technically retired, but still teaching plenty of people, and also music director of Sinfonia da Camera, which opens its season on Saturday with a concert of music by Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms. And so this unintentional, on Schumann's part, foreshadowing of music that Brahms used later sort of can lead us into that conversation. Any particular reason to have chosen the three Bs other than they're the three Bs
for your opener? I think that there was no doubt. I mean, as you said, these are the three famous Bs. Yeah. And, you know, if you're in England, the next one to come along is Benjamin Britten, and if you're in Hungary, it's Bartok. So
it's actually amazing the number of really famous and really good composers whose names started with B.
But there was never any doubt about this. I was thinking about some different pieces, and having decided on the Magnificat with the chorus, the Brahms. I mean, there aren't that many pieces of Brahms that I would do with my size of ensemble. You know, we don't do the symphonies, of course, but the overtures are wonderful, and the Academic Festival Overture is a great celebration of...
Well, it's the happier of the two big overtures.
Indeed, yeah. Indeed. Well, the other one's called Tragic, so... But the variations on the theme of Haydn on the St. Anthony Chorale exist in two versions, one for two pianos, one for the orchestra, and we've done that several times, so this is the first time that we've done this.
The Academic Festival. Yeah. And of course, we started out the show with that one this morning. Here's a little bit. I love the Bach Magnificat, and here's just the opening portion of that. This has got to be one of the most fabulously joyous pieces of music that exists. This is a performance by the Taverner players and soloists. No soloists in this portion, led by Andrew Parrott.
Magnificat, 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 magn
was the glorious opening music of the Magnificat of Johann Sebastian Bach. And I'd forgotten, I didn't sample this recording ahead of time. I know some of Andrew Parrott's work, he's a conductor there, of the Taverner players who are the instrumentalists. And now I know why he didn't list the Taverner consort, which is his choir, because they're not there. He uses a number of solo voices, who in this case were, well, I won't list them all. Emma Kirkby, the most stellar among them, the wonderful early music soprano. And that's just the opening movement of the Magnificat. The whole piece will be sung by the chorale at the University of Illinois, guest conducted by Fred Stolzfus with Sinfonia da Camera this Saturday as Sinfonia opens its 2011-2012 concert season with music also by Brahms and by Beethoven. Ian Hobson, who's my guest on today's Live and Local, will be conducting the Brahms and the Beethoven, of course. And Beethoven is the seventh symphony, one of his most joyous pieces. Of course, he's got a lot of joyous pieces for orchestra. And the seventh, just because you had to pick one.
Well, yes, we haven't done it for a while. And having committed to the Academic Festival Overture of Brahms, which is a fairly big piece and requires more extended string section than we usually use. I'm using more string players also in the Beethoven. Fred is just using a smaller string section for the Bach, of course. So having the players available, we are making use of them in this very grand symphony.
Yeah, and we're going to hear a little bit of the second movement, which is something of a funeral march, which he did a few of.
Yes, in a way, it's in the solemn spirit of a funeral march, although he doesn't call it that. Strangely enough, tonight I'm playing in the Schumann concert. I'm doing a piece called "Exercises in the Form of Variations" by Schumann, and it's based on this slow movement theme. Although he never actually gives you the theme to hear, you just have to realize it as you go along that that's what it is. He also quotes from other movements and also the Ninth Symphony and the slow movement of the
pastoral. In these etudes, So he's, do you think in that case he was entertaining the performer mostly, or were people familiar enough with Beethoven's music that the audience might well pick up?
Yeah, I think he was writing for himself, and the exercises are as much exercises for Schumann in compositional technique as exercises for a virtuoso pianist. They're difficult, certainly, but they are very clever compositionally.
Well, here's a bit of the opening of that second movement from Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. This is a favorite recording of mine. It's with the Tonhalle Orchestra of Zurich, conducted by David Zinman here on Live and Local. That's the opening portion of the second movement of the Seventh Symphony of Ludwig van Beethoven, a performance here by the Tonhalle Orchestra of Zurich, conducted by David Zinman on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The complete Seventh Symphony will be on Saturday's opening concert for Sinfonia da Camera this season, Ian Hobson conducting, and he's my guest here on this portion, well, this whole show of Live and Local to give us a preview of the season. So that's the first concert, Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, actually Brahms, Bach, Beethoven in that order. You want to kind of run down everything else going on this year for
sure,
the orchestra?
Sure, well, I think the next one is very interesting for me, especially this year. It's on Saturday, October the 22nd, which happens to be Franz Liszt's 200th birthday. The exact day. And we're doing some piano pieces, but the Mephisto Waltz is in the orchestral version and without piano. And then we have the Hungarian Fantasy, which I'm going to play on the piano with the orchestra. And that is an orchestral arrangement of his 14th Hungarian Rhapsody for the piano. He wrote, I think, 19 Hungarian Rhapsodies, which are basically Gypsy Rhapsodies.
And it's a little confusing if you look at, you know, the numbering system, because there's a numbering system for piano and then there's a numbering system for orchestra.
Yes, completely
don't correspond.
Yeah. Luckily, he doesn't even mention this connection, so we just know it as the Hungarian Fantasy. But it's a very effective piece. And then the major work on this program is the Dante Symphony. Liszt wrote two big symphonies, both with choral forces. The Faust Symphony and the Dante Symphony. Dante Symphony, he dedicated it to Wagner. It has women's chorus, and he was going to write it in three movements, because it's based on the Divine Comedy of Dante. So Inferno, Purgatorio, and then Paradiso, and Wagner persuaded him, forget the Paradiso, we're not going to be able to do justice to that. So he just left it with two movements, and then the chorus sings Magnificat at the end of the second movement.
And you'll be using the University of Illinois Women's Glee Club.
Women's Glee Club.
For that one. Yeah, I don't know that. I don't know that piece at all. Well, maybe we'll talk about that as we get up to that.
It's not as well known, certainly, as the Faust Symphony, but it's a very impressive piece.
And then in
And then we go to
February,
in which it's a Mozart concert, and there are three pieces in E flat on this concert. We're doing the Sinfonia Concertante for violin and viola, which is, of course, real Mozart, and no doubt about it. And we're doing the Sinfonia Concertante in E-flat for winds, which is a lovely piece, and most people don't think it was written by Mozart. It was written by Sus Mayo or some of these contemporaries who may have helped Mozart or taken some of the themes and elaborated on them. But it's a wonderful piece. And also we're doing the 39th Symphony, which is in E-flat, to finish that program, and open with the Seraglio Overture.
And you'll be featuring soloists from the orchestra.
Yes, absolutely, including our guest, a violinist who will be guest concertmaster, Federico Agostini, in that program. And
you have a guest concertmaster because your former concertmaster retired, and I guess
that's right.
Shaban Lupo has seized.
Shaban
has left
town. In fact, gone back to Europe. The former concertmaster, co-concertmaster with him, Peter Schaefer, will be joining us for this first concert, and at other times during the season as well. But we are inviting guest people to come throughout the concerts.
So that Mozart concert is on February the 11th.
That's right.
So Saturday.
And then the program in March on the 10th is going to be an American music concert. Speaking of anniversaries, we have an anniversary of Don Gillis, who was a Toscanini's NBC producer with the orchestra in the 50s, and also wrote lots of very light, amusing symphonies. I've happened to have recorded them all with Polish orchestra. And this is his most famous one, and it's called Symphony No. 5½.
And that
Toscanini
almost sounds
actually performed this piece.
That sounds like a PDQ Bach designation or something
like that. And it sounds like Looney Tunes, you know, it's that kind of thing, but very, very clever.
You have to send us your recordings of that. I don't know if we have those.
You will have that, I hope. Yeah. If not, I'll make sure you get them. We're also doing another piece, which is by Jim Pugh, our trombonist. Trombone faculty. And his piece is called Lunch with Schrödinger's Cat.
Should I know who Schrödinger's cat was?
Well, it's a scientific reference. Oh, okay. I'm not sure I can explain it that well. But we also have some really famous pieces of Americana on there, the American in Paris of Gershwin, and also Dmitry Kuzov, our cellist faculty, is going to be the soloist in Shlomo of Bloch, who is sort of an honorary American in any case.
And then music of Charles Tomlinson Griffiths.
Yes, yes. The Jonathan Keeple will play the poem by Griffiths, which is a lovely piece.
I brought in that. Just for the fun of it, just the opening of that. It has a wonderful opening, I think, if it's the piece that I remember. This is a performance from long ago with the Eastman Rochester Orchestra, conducted by Howard Hansen, and the flutist must be credited somewhere, and I'll have to look up that as we listen. And that's just a bit of the poem for flute and orchestra by Charles Tomlinson Griffiths, American composer, born 1884, the flutist in this performance with Eastman Rochester Orchestra, conducted by Howard Hansen, was Joseph Mariano. And that will be one of the pieces on an All-American program that Sinfonietta Camera is playing next March, the fourth concert of its 2011-12 season, and the last concert will be another of the Rush Hour concerts, which I guess you started, Ian, a couple of years ago. So this will be the third or fourth one?
I think it's the third one, yeah.
So some music of Edvard Grieg and some pieces yet to be determined.
Yes. Central and Northern European extravaganza.
And that'll be at on the 17th of April, which is a Tuesday evening. Ian Hobson will open his All Schumann Piano series, 10-concert series of all of the solo works of Schumann, tonight with a free program at 7:30. That's going to be in Smith Music Hall, Smith Recital Hall on University of Illinois campus. And the Sinfonietta Camera season opens on Saturday at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, also at 7:30 with the Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms program. Our program today is made possible with support from Outback Concerts, presenting Australian guitarist and CMA Global Country Artist Award winner Tommy Emmanuel at the Virginia Theater on September 21st. Tickets are on sale now at thevirginia.org. Charge by phone at 217-356-9063. And by the way, Tommy Emmanuel will be on this show live next Wednesday, which is the 21st. He's also playing, by the way, in Peoria also on the 22nd, I think. We also have support today from Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. And on tomorrow's show, I'll be talking with a member of a group from Chicago called, with the wonderful name of, the Sanctified Grumblers, who are an old-time group who are going to be playing this week on as a preview to the Folk and Roots Festival in Urbana-Champaign. They'll be playing, I actually forget where in town they're playing. We'll certainly find that out tomorrow. That's on tomorrow's show. This is 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR and Classical Music for Central Illinois. One of the pieces on tonight's recital that Ian is playing is, are the Symphonic Etudes of Schumann. And we're going to go out for the little bit of the final portion of that from a former faculty member at the University of Illinois, Andrew DeGrado. This was a concert produced in memoriam. He died tragically, early 90s, I guess. But I understand you'll be playing his piano.
Yes, we have. His piano is one of the pianos on Smith Hall, and that's the one that I have chosen to play. It's a very fine piano.
And Andrew, did you participate in hiring Andrew?
Well, I was on the faculty when he was hired, yes.
Yeah, and he wasn't here all that long, unfortunately, but left a good legacy and left us his piano. Well, it sounds like a great series. We'll talk to you more, I'm sure, as some of the other Schumann programs come up and certainly as the other Sinfonia programs come up. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
It's Ian Hobson here on Live and Local, and this is pianist Andrew DeGrado, the final etude of the Symphonic Etudes of Schumann, his Opus 13. Thank you.